A5, number 2B.
Yes. So we can see the following thing, that we have first God as a general term, then really overlapping with it are the seven synonymous terms, all being God itself again, nothing outside of God, nothing in addition to God, but bringing out the nature of God from various aspects, then a further ripple showing how each synonymous term differentiates through the ideas that characterize the seven synonymous term in a specific way, so that actually we can see that every idea of the seven synonymous term, they are also synonymous with God. We never leave the field of the one being. Therefore, we can see something that even if we analyze God, synonym, ideas, that each idea must be synonymous with every other idea of all the other synonymous terms. Is that clear? Huh? Because they never leave the infinite. Now, this is something that is differentiating our language from ordinary, everyday language. And that makes a difficulty, a great difficulty. Because we live naturally in our everyday language day in and day out since 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years. Use it constantly as everyday language. And in everyday language, the terms which we use are not synonymous in everyday language. Again, I start. There is in everyday language, now I speak in everyday language. In everyday language, you have the term God. All right, that's an indefinite term. Nobody really knows what God is. Everyone defines it the way he likes to define it. And there is no definitizing definition of God. So each one speaks about God and everyone means something else. Even if he uses our seven synonymous terms, he uses it not as synonymous term for God. If he uses the term mind, then in everyday language, mind is not synonymous with God, nor is it synonymous with the other terms like spirit or soul or principle or life, truth and love, in everyday language. If somebody says, well, he just went out of his mind, or what expression do you have about mind? He lost his mind, or have you a good one about mind? Well, then mind, you see, isn't synonymous with spirit, or with soul, or with principle. Think of it. That a natural scientist who speaks about his principles, that principle is not synonymous with soul or with love. So in everyday language, these terms are not synonymous. And even more so, if we take the ideas characterizing the seven synonymous terms, if we take, for instance, intelligence as an idea of mind in Christian Science, and if we take, say, joy as an idea of soul in Christian Science, then intelligence and joy are synonymous because they all refer to a synonymous term and the synonymous term refer to God. So they are synonymous. Somewhere in a further layer, in a further ripple, they are synonymous. Huh? Not so in the ordinary language. In the ordinary language, nobody would say that intelligence is synonymous with joy. Not at all. Can you see what we are up against? We are up against using a completely new language in Christian Science, with a completely new meaning, with a new sense, content, meaning, content, than what we use in ordinary language. We have, so to say, to shift constantly when we speak in ordinary language, shift constantly to the language in Christian Science, though using the same terms, intelligence, mind, joy, principle, life, and things like that. They are all, when understood properly in Christian Science, in the new language, they are synonymous. This brings us to the question that has been asked so often, and especially in the last years or so. Why don't we use a new language? Why don't we have a specific terminology like any other science would use? If we have another science, and especially a new science, say biology or cybernetics or anything like that, they need new terms to express the ideas that are being brought out in their language. What do they do in order to express it? They form new words. They usually go back to the Greek and sometimes to the Latin and form just new words, like cybernetics. Go back to the cyberneter in Greek, which means the steersman, and take it over and say, I coin a new word, and if you like to know what this new word is, you better take our definition, and then you know it. You have to learn a new term. And very often people have asked us, why didn't Mrs. Eddy, or why don't we invent a new language that is so definitely bringing out our meaning of what we want to bring out, that it is so distinct from the ordinary language that there is no mistake about it. Actually, naturally, we could have done that, or Mrs. Eddy could have done that. She could have defined God through some new terms which she would have coined, perhaps from the Greek, in order to bring out the new nature of God, so that when one uses those terms, they are distinguishable and unmistakably distinguishable from the ordinary use of the language. But Mrs. Eddy didn't do that. And I think in a way we can be glad that she didn't do it. Because in this way, as she used, she tried to formulate her terminology, she could make a bridge between everyday experience and the new teaching of Christian Science. But she had to do something about the new terminology. And what she could do was by capitalizing these terms that were used in a different way in Christian Science compared with everyday language. So by capitalizing mind and spirit and soul and principle, life, truth and love, she found a very easy mean only to introduce, so to say, seven new meanings, and unhappily enough, it's only good for the written word, not for the spoken word. Because if in the spoken word I say soul, well, then it's soul, no matter if when written it is a small s or a capital S. The spoken language is then inadequate, more inadequate than the written language. So we have a difficulty in understanding each other until we have a common agreement, so to say, that if we use certain terms, we know at once if they are used capitalized or uncapitalized. What does it mean? It means that Mrs. Eddy had to use a new terminology. Her terminology was, or is, characterized through the capitalized terms, which means that we have to learn this new language, though in speaking it, they are the same terms, but with completely two different meanings. Now, I have shown you how perhaps language has developed through the thousands of years, or perhaps a million of years, with the human language from a single syllable, perhaps, up to the differentiation. Now, the language that Mrs. Eddy is speaking has been built the very opposite way. She went out from the whole instead from a single syllable. She went out from the whole, namely from the term God, from the most comprehensive sense, and said, there is one being, and I take in that one being in one term, God. Then I begin to break that one term down, just as Moses broke down his vision on the mountain, broke it down and gave the commandments. She broke it down, she analyzed it through the seven. So she had seven aspects, but still of the whole. And then she broke those seven down by characterizing each one through further ideas, through the ideas. Therefore, can you see? This is the point. Therefore, each one of those ideas, like intelligence, cause, law, guiding, steering, like unfoldment, fruit, order, and so on, all those ideas which we know about the seven synonymous term mean something completely different than in ordinary language, because it's a language that has been deduced from God through the principle of synonymity, and therefore each one of these ideas are synonymous with all the seven synonymous terms, and they are synonymous with the term God. And therefore each one of these ideas gather a new meaning, a completely different meaning than the one we have in ordinary language. What we can do is that one trains oneself in that new language. That's why the study of the synonymous term is a study that takes years, I would say one's lifetime. Because, as we have seen yesterday, it's the one and only question that is really important. Being. So what we want to do this week is to culture ourselves, and especially give the method of how to culture ourselves in this new language. The language which has not built up humanly, human language, but is that language which came from the one God, the divine language, the language of spirit. What we are talking is the language of spirit. No matter if we use as symbols the human language, like law and cause and creator and unfoldment and identity and so on, they are terms which we have taken from the human language, but to which we give a divine meaning, a new meaning. That's the language of spirit. They will speak in new tongues. So, if we speak in new tongues, in the language of spirit, we have to be aware that it is always a language that is the language of God, not the human language. It's always the language of God. It's the only language that being understands and that being speaks. And that language of God, or the language of spirit, has another quality. Namely, it's a one-valued language. It's a one-valued language. It's a language that has only one value, which is completely free from a dualistic sense, from the two-valued logic. I may come back to this time and time again and explaining more and more as we go on the difference and the importance of it. But you can see what happens when we speak that new language of spirit, that we always go out from God, that God is only one and never dualistic. Therefore, everything that is being said about being has the same nature as God Himself, never an opposite nature, is never dualistic. Therefore, reasons only in the one-valued logic. The human language is always reasoning in the two-valued logic. You know what that means? Human reasoning, up to very recently, and what happened recently, perhaps I can tell you later on or so, but up to very recently, since the birth of logic, since Aristoteles, reasoning has always been dualistic. The human mind can only reason in opposite values. Either something is high or it is low. Either it's great or it's small. Either it's right. If it is not right, it is always wrong. If it's not on the left, then it is on the right. If it's life, then it's not death. If it's true, then it's not false. Can you see? The human mind is that tricky thing that always consider the both aspect of something. It's dualistic. It always accepts that something, when it is right, that it is right, and that everything that does not conform to that is wrong. So it classifies always everything in one realm against the other realm. And therefore has always in view a dual realm, a realm that is opposed against each other. And out of that we have the whole characteristics of the human mind that is constantly at strife and struggles and has opposition and has enemies and has counter power and opposite powers and opposite views and so on. It's always a terrific battle that ensues. Not so in the language of spirit. If we begin to train ourselves in the language of spirit, which is the only, which knows no dualism, which is only speaking about the one and the only being, then we only think in terms of the one value of being. And it's the one-valued logic, where there is never anything opposite that enters our calculations and our thinking. We never run against something in the spiritual language. Only in the human, we always run against a wall, against somebody, against a situation, against something that happens. In the realm of spirit, we don't do that. Yes, so we begin to see that if we start out studying the synonymous terms, that we begin to have a completely different inner consciousness and attitude, the attitude of only one being, where therefore everything has to be explained within that one being, no matter what the term is for that. If the term is sickness, if the term is some total of human misery, whatever the term is, in the language of spirit it is always explained as the one being. or we have not found our answer in the synonymous terms. So can you see what we are trying to achieve in a practical way, that actually through learning the seven synonymous terms and their ideas and their further implications, we will resolve any dualistic sense within ourselves. That's why it is the language of spirit, spirit the only, that has no dualistic sense within itself. So the practical application, as we could call it, what is the practical use of studying the seven synonymous terms, is now very evident. Namely, that we begin to reculture our consciousness, restructure our consciousness out of the old human language, which with its dualistic value and evaluation, and establish consciously through discipline and through exercise a completely new consciousness that always tries to go out from the one God, the one being, sees from the one being the seven synonymous terms that are still the one being, because each synonymous term is one, and from there we still look out to the infinite ideas characterizing these seven synonymous terms still being one and synonymous with God. Then we have a new consciousness that only can think in this one valued logic. Yes. So this is what we want to do, to re-educate ourselves in that new language. And it's a terrific re-education, because there is some thousand or even a billion year of tradition ingrained in our consciousness that still thinks in the mortal way, in the human way, in the dualistic way. And so we have to really consciously restructure and re-educate and reculture our consciousness. The program which lies before us would therefore be about the following steps, which each step will take quite a few days. Namely, the very first step will be devoted to concept building. I will call it, the airplane is going by, yes, would be concept building. The building of new concepts. What do I mean with that? If we have suddenly, instead of mind, mind, with a capital M, instead of spirit and spirits, spirit, with a capital S, and so on, we have to know what these terms mean. What the term mind, that is at first just M-I-N-D, what that term means, and therefore first to get a clear concept of the term. What is meant by that term? I would call that concept building. We build up the term. We fill, so to say, the empty shell, as M-I-N-D. We fill that empty shell with concepts that are adequate for that term until that shell is full, the concept is full, and then when that concept is full, we can say, now this concept has really the nature of an idea. It's very clear now. But it's still a concept. We clarify, so to say, in our human mind, we clarify the concept of the seven synonymous terms. Well, that's the concept building. Then when we say mind, something within us registers it and says he means mind with a capital M in this case and not with a small m in another case. And when he means mind with a capital M, he means with mind all the various ideas that characterize mind. And you have a concept that is full. And you know, oh no, I know, I have the same language as he. Now we speak about the same thing. When I say mind and you listen as mind, we mean the same thing. So the concept is the same. Once that is built, and is important to build, then the second stage will be really the tonality building. The tonality building is I would nearly say the opposite way of getting rid of the concepts and just hear the very tone of these synonymous terms. So that when I say mind, and you know it's mind with a capital M, you don't feel you have to recount within yourself and re-enumerate all the ideas that belong to mind, the whole list of about 100 or 150 ideas that characterize mind. You just know the tone mind. And it is a tone that is independent now of all the ideas characterizing that term. So that we drop afterwards again the very heavy, burdensome list of ideas and just have the tone. But then, when we have the tone, that tone seems to be much bigger than the list of ideas we had before in the concept building. Because then when we have the tone, we can hear mind or see mind there where in nature, in the book, in the Bible, those terms that characterize mind do not appear, we hear mind. Did I put that right? But I will show you that over hours and hours. I will read to you perhaps for an hour or 2 hours the Bible. And just for tonality, say the Bible does not know, for instance, the term mind, spirit, soul, principle, does not appear. But the tone is in the Bible. You see? So if we have the tonality of the seven synonymous terms, we free ourselves of the individual terms characterizing the concept of mind, and yet get a much bigger sense of what mind means. That would be tonality building.